we can let the audience in on this. This is a bit of a pompadour.
And now it's time for Pompadour section. Pompadour.
We're recording this episode a bit in advance because Mike has pressing work commitments. I have very pressing holiday commitments.
And I'm pressing all of my trousers, which I do every 2 years.
So we're actually recording this in 2014.
Yes. Yes. We were so backed up, weren't we?
Yeah. We had to find a time we could all do, and it turned out
It's the only free bit of the diary.
Yeah.
It's great to know that we can do this kind of thing, and that you know, whenever we want, if we have to, we could all move to France or Spain and work there. Do you know what I mean? Sorry. Yeah.
And trade tariff free.
Yeah.
But full disclosure. So today's Wednesday. On Monday we recorded another episode. Then yesterday I spent sitting in this very same chair just editing episodes of Three Bean Salad. And today we're recording another episode of Three Bean Salad. So normally in this opening section, we would draw on what maybe we've been doing during the week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But literally since the last episode was recorded, all I've done is sit in the same place and edit episodes of Three Bean Salad.
Yeah.
I'm less than human at this stage.
And I've mostly been driving and haven't had a single thought.
I just want to say that what I've been up to is I've really just been reflecting on the fact that I've just been reflecting on you know, Austria's winning entrant in this year's Eurovision Song Contest. and just thinking, you know, is Conchita Wurst the future of music? And I think she might be. I think what she did with Rise Like a Phoenix was amazing. Do you know what I mean? And I just think it really makes me think that 2014 is a great time to be alive. I didn't normally talk about the year as much as I am at the moment, but and I think
I think I'm still on a bit of a high after the wonderful occasion that was the 2014 Brazil World Cup.
Oh, it was so great! It's funny you refer to it as the 2014 World Cup when we're in the year 2014 right now, Ben. But that's the thing about World Cups, isn't it? They make you think about the year. But also, honestly, we're having a laugh, but I think we shouldn't forget the political unrest currently happening in Thailand. So,
obviously, because the Royal Thai Armed Forces, led by General Prayut Chan-o-cha, commander of the Royal Thai Army, has obviously just launched a coup d'etat.
Yeah. So watch this space.
Which I think is the 12th since the country's first coup in 1932 against the caretaker government of Thailand.
But I've been trying to take my mind off everything that's going on in Thailand with the news that the Japanese space agency JAXA is launching the unscrewed space probe Hayabusa 2 from the Tanegashima Space Center on a 6-year round trip mission to collect rock samples.
I tell you what, you know what? They could save a lot of money. I could collect some rock samples from right my garden, right? I could.
You don't think they need to get all the way to space?
For a fraction of the price, I could give you as many rock samples as you want, like within hours. I mean, what are you going to find out from a rock? I mean, I certainly don't think you're going to find out anything that would make a difference to Microsoft's agreement to extend support for Windows XP for the next 12 years.
And is it any coincidence that that's happened at the same time that Latvia has adopted the euro? I don't think so.
Well, but I tell you what, it's quite hard doing this, isn't it? Knowing that it's, 7 years before we actually start the podcast itself. But Ben, you were very persuasive in your email that you'd looked at your diary and you're pretty sure that...
That 2014 was the right time to do it, yeah.
Yeah.
I think what I wanted to do really was maybe mark 100 years since the start of World War One, subconsciously.
Yeah, that's that's a nice way to do it.
That's why Mike is dressed as Archduke Franz Ferdinand.
Yeah.
From the waist up. And from the waist down, I'm in traditional Spanish regalia because, of course, Philippe VI is getting crowned following the abdication of his father, Juan Carlos I.
Of course.
Yeah. Bloody David Cameron. Anyway, I won't talk about politics anymore, but bloody hell, he's absolutely helps his old, isn't he, at the moment? Is he? Yeah.
Wonder what these ISIS chaps are going to turn out to be like.
Probably nothing to worry about. But I tell you what is bothering me this new bloody Microsoft High Sierra update.
Do you mean Microsoft?
No, Apple. This new bloody Apple High Sierra update. Isn't that good?
Anyway, why don't we all listen to one of the leading jazz records being released this year, Trademark by Krista Fredrickson.
While test driving, the Acura RLX, of course.
I was thinking of doing that. I do like to test drive all the cars as they come out, just to stay on top of it.
I mean, I'd like to do that, but I'm still reeling from the fact that the actor Tim Pigott-Smith, who plays the Prime Minister H.H. Asquith in the BBC drama 37 Days, has recently told the Andrew Marr show that television needs more informative drama.
You know, I once had a very short conversation with Tim Pigott-Smith in a urinal.
Wow.
Did you?
Yeah.
What about?
Well, it was about a production of Waiting for Godot that I'd been in.
That you'd been
in? Yeah. Yeah. Weirdly, he was talking to me about a production that I'd been
in. What? Hang on. You had a conversation with the acclaimed actor Tim Pigott-Smith in which you talked about a production that you'd been in.
I couldn't stop myself. It's Tim Pigott-Smith. I thought, you only get one chance at this. I went up to him. I tapped him on the shoulder. I said, Tim Pigott-Smith.
He was pissing, by the way, when this happened.
I said...
So you tapped him on the shoulder. He turned around, soaking your trousers and shoes.
Soaked me in immaculate, you know, perfectly trained piss. Beautifully, wonderfully clear, resonant.
Sparkling.
Booming, sparkling, just...
National treasure level piss.
Cut glass British piss. And I said, Tim Pigott-Smith, he nodded. I said, did you see me in Waiting for Godot?
In my sixth form college production in 1995.
No, it was basically it was some sort of theatre. It's quite a harrowing story. I don't know if this is the time to tell it, but at university, I was in a production of Waiting for Godot, playing one of the two characters who's waiting for Godot.
Yeah.
And
who are you playing opposite?
A guy called Andrew.
Prince Andrew.
Yeah. If you don't give the surname an Andrew now, people are always going to assume it's Prince Andrew. And the production did quite, you know, everyone thought it was quite good. We won a competition.
Okay.
To go to this like national play thing that was happening at Scarborough. It was like a national, I don't know if it still happens, like a theatre. So all universities around the country sent.
Yes, the National Student Drama Festival. It's still going.
National Student Drama Festival. I did a workshop with Sandy Toksvig when I was there, by the way. So.
Does she hold the keys to a definitive estragon?
I think I was estragon, by the way. Anyway. So we were riding high. We'd won, you know, they sent judges and we'd won a place at this thing. So it's plays from all over the country. So we performed Waiting for Godot. And
people pretended to watch it.
People pretended to watch it, as they do in theatres around the world to this day.
Yeah. They definitely
that's the contract.
They definitely weren't making an internal shopping list during the show.
No.
Thinking about how not. To tax their car.
None of them were wondering, did I tax the car? It's exactly the same date that I did the MOT, or was that a week later? I know that there's a lot of car stuff at this time of year.
Oh, I know. It's the residence parking permit. That's what I forgot.
That's the one. You've got to get your car ducks in a row. You've got to get your car ducks in a row.
Clifford, have you brought a biro? Have you got a biro? I want to write something. Shh. I want to write something.
Shh. I'm trying to concentrate on our home contents insurance, darling. So they pretended to listen in the first half. What they didn't, though, pretend to do, which a lot of people at least do make the effort to generally, is to pretend to stay for the second half. So they didn't even... And that is when you know production of Godot is not working is... I mean, we hadn't basically... sold them the idea of that it was worth waiting for Godot. They were like...
Well, for them, Godot arrived. And they left with him.
They probably heard a rumour that Alan Ayckbourn was skimming stones down on the beach.
Yeah, it would have been something like that.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure it wasn't your performance.
It can't have been. It was awful. What happened was in the second half. Basically, performing it. It turns out that performing it at university in front of a fairly small group of your own friends, people that bought into that small student theatre, it's basically a mutual back scratching thing. Mm-hmm. And then we were suddenly in a much more real environment in a big theatre, and we hadn't really.
Basically, you went from the equivalent of playing tennis against a wall to playing tennis against Rafael Nadal.
And Rafael Nadal essentially walked out halfway through the second set because he was so bored. And that's the bad thing. You know you're playing Rafael Nadal, you expect him to beat your ass, mm-hmm. but you don't expect him to walk out.
No.
Yeah, we had quite a few walkouts. We hadn't re-rehearsed it enough. I think some of my acting techniques had included things like, I'm not going to say using silly voices, but...
Where's your god, though?
Ooh. Where is a god, though? I don't know. Is it coming? Oh, where's a god coming?
Henry Becker plays Mario playing Estragon.
It's not necessarily theatre for all seasons, is it?
No.
Sure. But you're pushing the boundaries.
Is that something that Sandy Toksvig taught you directly? Or
Toksvig's workshop was one of the few positives I took from that weekend. It was unrelated. There were a series of workshops during the day, and it turned out quite brutal humiliations in the evening when we actually had to put the show on. And basically, I could feel that the show was going wrong. I was thinking, what do you do, Henry? How do you win them over? You've tried the Italian accent.
You've tried the script as is.
I've tried the script as is and as isn't at this point. I've tried. I'm not going to say pulling stupid facial expressions, but I have tried doing that. Basically, I've tried to make my facial expressions more vibrant, more extreme, more grabbing. That hasn't worked. People are still walking out. I've tried doing something which I sometimes do if I'm tense in real life, which is try and throw the sort of pressure onto the other person by just looking at them the whole time. So if I just talk quite quietly now, actually, sort of retreat into my shell, as it were.
And maybe they'll just be interested in the fact that Prince Andrew's doing a play in front of you.
Forming one half of Waiting for Godot.
No, but it was a disastrous production, right? You could feel we were losing the audience. A lot of them didn't come back in the second half. It was brutal. And believe you me, if you think it's boring and hard work to sit through a production of it, try doing that on stage as part of it. Because I couldn't think about my car insurance.
Well, if you're not bored doing it, you're not doing it properly. Are you?
Exactly. That's what they say. You've got to relate to the audience. You've got to play the truth. And the truth of the moment is, I'm bored. I don't know who Godot is. I did this production a few months ago in front of mainly friends. I pulled some funny facial expressions and did a stupid Italian accent. People laughed.
And should I go with third-party fire and theft or fully comprehensive?
Also, bearing in mind, I'm a student at the moment. I don't really have insurance things to think about, but is there such a thing as student insurance? Should I think about getting student insurance? I mean, is it possible I could insure myself against getting bad grades, for example?
Or maybe putting on a poorly received play. If only you'd bought the insurance in advance.
But you always think of it too late.
There's no time to think of that because they're leaving at the end of the first half. You don't know the streets of Scarborough very well, but you've got to somehow shepherd them back in if you can.
It's not going to be easy.
It's a fool's errand. It's never going to work.
The most disastrous thing about it was, you know, Mike, you'll know this.
Oh. What?
You're in rep.
Yeah.
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 You've been, You've been.
My time doing rep in Bognor.
In Bognor, you've been giving your Andromeda, right?
Yeah, my roller skates Andromeda.
Your roller skates Andromeda, and it's one of those nights where everything's going wrong. All the grand dames have shat themselves. The horse is the wrong way round.
Yeah, the wheels are literally coming off the roller skates.
The wheels are coming. Someone's accidentally plugged in the phone, the false phone, into the actual phone socket. You're getting calls. You're getting wrong numbers.
Of course, someone's also accidentally plugged in the custard pie, so that's creating electric shocks.
Yeah, you know, there's nights where everything goes wrong. So that's what we had. And at the end of the play, at the end of Waiting for Godot, I think it's Estragon's trousers fall down. Mm. And, you know, it's all part of what makes the play so wonderful, which is that It's at that point in the play
you see an ass
when you realise that your phone is probably actually covered by your home contents. That's the breakthrough a lot of people make at the end, which is like, I don't need, I'm already covered. Bravo! And that's when people throw the roses, that realisation. But no, see, at the end of the play, you know, because the whole play is, it's a mixture of very, 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 very boring. And, but what happens is there's this kind of vaudeville element. Yeah? There's a vaudeville, there's a vaudeville element.
The arse bearing.
Which is when the trousers fall down, you see, which is something, you know, which is referencing music hall.
And arses.
And arses. And basically, so at the end of the play, literally, I think, I can't remember what the last line is, but it's something like, God, oh, Christ, I'm pretty sure he's going to turn up. He will turn up. It's something like that. It's a reference to Godot. And and then Estragon's trousers fall down. And then the audience clap. And this night, and what happened was, this night, I stood there and my trousers didn't fall down. And that was the end of the play.
Hang on. How were the trousers meant to fall down? Were they on some kind of... Was there a small charge goes off and then...
There was a very, very small explosive charge mounted to the back of my...
So had your arse grown during the Sandy Toksvig
Was it flushed with embarrassment? Was it swollen and flushed from shame?
It could have been that. I was panic eating.
So the hardcore Beckett completists that have stayed just for that moment, the few people who have stayed, they didn't even get their trouser moment. They must have been livid.
Had the humiliation given you a humiliation boner?
Swashbuckling suggestion from Benjamin. What sort of reception did you get from the remaining audience?
Muted. And what happened was, the next day, there was a kind of, essentially a sort of seminar was called.
Crisis seminar.
No, basically, every morning there was a big, everyone came to a big lecture hall, and there was a big debate, a discussion about all the plays from the previous night. And our play got, our production got absolutely annihilated. we had to sit there while it was absolutely annihilated.
By other students?
By other students.
Sort of visiting pros.
Other students, other the judges. So they were probably pros or semi-pros, journalists and people like that. Stephen Burkoff was almost certainly there. Just in a cage, just snarling and spitting and foaming at the mouth. With what we Tim Bickett Smith was one of the judges. So then at some point in a urinal, he came up to me and said, you know, no hard feelings, mate, or whatever. Oh, like,
after the seminar was this?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Had he torn a strip off?
No. He hadn't been horrible.
When you were at the urinal and you were undoing your trousers, did he make a sort of pointed reference to the fact your trousers didn't fall down at the end of the play?
He went like, yeah, you seem to be able to get your trousers down now. Exactly. Shame it's 15 hours too late.
Because you, of course, let them drop fully to your ankles, don't you, when you're using a urinal?
Always, yeah. Always. Yeah. Could be safe.
Fill the air on your calves. So he was nice about it.
Oh, yeah, no, he was totally nice about it. And he said that the first thing you should do is swap. You should swap roles. I mean, I was thinking, like, mate, this production of Waiting for Godot is not going on. It's not. I'm not going to carry on touring this. You know what I mean? Like, it's over. But he said, what you need to do is you need to swap you and the other actor for
Prince Andrew
for two different actors. No, he thought me and the other actor should swap roles. I think the problem was a lot deeper than that. I think that's
a kind thing to say, though, isn't it? He would have known. He's no fool. He would have known that production was at its end. But
that is a nice thing to say. Is it? You're talking to an actor who's worked hard to embody their character, work out their deepest flaws and internal logic, and he's gone, yeah, it's not working for either of you. Yeah. You might be better off trying again with the other character.
No, I think it is good. I think it's the only. I think he probably had to dig quite hard, deep to search for something kind to say. And this is the kindest thing that there could be found to be said about this woeful insult to British theatre.
Because the fact is, it's rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, isn't it? It's swapping one basically shit actor for another. The truth is, we both needed to be. All of us needed to be removed from that production. Except, though, one thing which made the whole thing even worse, in a way, was, I don't know if you know the play, but there's a bit where a sort of bloke on a sort of string comes along being led by someone.
He's called something like Pozzo?
Is it Pozzo?
Pozzo.
We had to do it at school. We didn't understand a single word that was being said.
Yeah. That guy, he basically won an award for like best actor. he won the award for best actor that year at the Scarborough Festival. So he was this guy that me and Vladimir, we barely even acknowledged him during the production. It was like, oh, God, that.
Someone's going to do the Pozzo. This chump will do.
Some chump's got to play Pozzo, I suppose. while I was just, you know, sorry, Pozzo, I haven't got time. I'm just working with these explosive trouser charges. but good luck to you, Pozzo. Yeah.
So he shone so
brightly. I'm just drying out my arse squib, so make sure it goes off tonight.
Yeah.
So he shone so brightly in this dog shit production.
Yeah.
That he's like the best actor of all time.
100%. He was amazing. He was brilliant.
Even the lowest wattage bulb will shine bright in a cave that dark.
Exactly.
So you think he won by comparison, really?
Yeah. To be honest, I think he was probably actually brilliant. He was probably really, really good.
And that man's name
was Russell Crowe.
This production's shit, mate. Pozzo. I'm Pozzo. Who the fuck are you?
Talk down to me, will you? Well, maybe someone's going to swap out these electric trouser charges. Yeah, swap it for a dad. A similar trick that I often use with parachutes with people that cross me.
Everyone knows I fucking aced that Sandy Toksvig workshop.
Toksvig knew I had something special.
I should have been giving the workshop to Toksvig.
Wow. Well, what a memory.
Yeah. But I've always thought there's something. I've never managed to sort of portray it properly in the anecdote when I tell it, but I think there's something kind of quite ironic, isn't there? Because normally your trousers falling down would be a bad thing, whereas in this case, my trousers not falling.
It was all you were being asked to do.
It's all you wanted.
All I wanted was my trousers to fall down, and he wouldn't even do that. That was the theatre gods, though, the theatre gods. They sometimes, when they take against a production... Like your one-man chess, Mike.
I was hoping we wouldn't come on to that.
No. And when you say one man, also playing all of the instruments as well.
Yeah.
My one-man band chess.
And the entire production, he wanted to be so mobile and so sort of travel-ready that it could all be stored inside.
Well, I was doing the whole Far East, wasn't I?
You're doing the whole Far East with just a travel chess.
Yeah, and a one-man band kit.
That's 4 years I'm not getting back in a hurry, is it? Still. Went down all right in Kyoto, I seem to remember. But they thought I was doing it, ironically.
Yeah.
Anyway.
What a show. This week's topic, as sent in by Dr. P, is tubes.
Tubes. Well, tubes, I would say, are the kind of... I'll tell you what. I think tubes are pretty, pretty vital.
Human beings are mainly tube, right? Inside?
We're mainly tubes.
People say we're mainly water, but we're mainly tubes.
We basically are a tube, basically. Mouth to anus, we are a tube.
Yeah.
Digestive tract talk. Oh, yeah.
Is that true, Mike?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
God's tube.
And essentially the point of the human organism is to break down foods, isn't it, via the tube.
We're basically a worm.
And often those foods themselves are tubes.
Pasta tubes.
If you're having a penne, for example.
All the other tubes available, like the one that's a tube but it's also wiggly.
Yeah.
Is that a rigatoni?
Still basically a tube. Cucumbers, sort of big tube, isn't it?
Filled tube.
Filled tube. All the animals are tubes in the same way. So, pigs, chickens, most obviously snakes, but yeah. They're all essential. I mean, the snake is the only animal which is basically just hasn't really added much to the tube in terms of its design.
Well, the snake is like the most honest animal. It's kind of gone.
It's the most honest animal.
I get it. I'm a tube.
Exactly, which is why it's ironic that it's culturally identified as the least honest animal.
Yes.
But that's no coincidence. That's because it is actually the most honest.
Because we dress it up. We sort of put baubles on our tube, right?
Exactly.
We've got clothes and...
headphones.
Arms and headphones.
Yeah. sometimes a biro or a pen in your top left-hand sort of breast pocket.
Which is another tube. It's just another tube.
That's just a tube.
Basically tubes holding a series of tubes.
That's an information tube. Yeah. And and you think about it. The essential tube, so it's a food, it's a way of breaking down food, right? That's our main point. That tube,
yeah.
Everything else is an accessory. So
powered on by we're breathing through tubes.
Breathing through tubes.
Pumping blood around a series of tubes.
And that's so that the main tube can function. Yeah. Our legs, which we could transport the tube around, those are tubes. Mm-hmm. So the legs are two tubes, which are, that's just for transporting the tube around. If it needs to get out of the way of something, for example... Yeah. That's the only reason we actually move.
Increasingly, scientists are realizing that the brain has the structure of a complicated church organ.
Yeah. Well, look at the brain. It's just some tube that has been poorly and quickly packed, as if trying to get on a Ryanair flight through hand luggage. It's like they've just had to pack it all in, darling. Just ram it together, and if you unfurl it,
they're only going to throw it into the back of the airplane anyway.
And if you unpack the brain, it's a tube that can stretch all the way to Wales.
From,
especially when you're in Wales.
Doesn't matter where you're from. It calculates it.
Well, the further away you are from Wales, the more your brain grows, and the more the longer the tubes, right? So you can reach Wales.
Exactly.
The tube. Yeah.
Oh, here we go. Henry's in his element here.
We've all lived in London at times.
That's true.
We've all used the tube. Weirdest thing you've seen on the tube?
I tell you what I never saw on the tube, but allegedly you could see on the tube sometimes, was David Bowie.
Really?
David Bowie allegedly used to travel around by tube and he would read a Greek newspaper. Do you not know this?
Oh, I'm aware of this, yes.
No, I don't know this.
He'd be reading a Greek newspaper. So the idea was that you'd look at him and go, is that David Bowie? And then someone with you would go, no, probably not. So look, he's reading a Greek newspaper. So it must be a Greek guy that looks like David Bowie.
Poor David Bowie, though. He couldn't, you know, crack into a novel or read the London Light. He had to read a Greek newspaper.
I tell you what, I once saw... This is actually quite bad. I once saw Paul Weller on the tube. Because basically, there are two types of celebrity / you know, famous rich people. There are those that still travel by the tube and those that don't.
Yes.
Yeah. And Weller, obviously... He's a Londoner through and through, is he?
Well,
sometimes I'll say that and someone will go, no, they're from Liverpool. I'll go, oh, fuck, I never really thought about it, yeah.
I'm happy to assume he's a Londoner through and through.
But yeah, so he was on
the tube.
He was
born in Woking.
Okay. So this is what happened, right? I was on the tube. I was it was quite busy, so I was standing. I was with a friend. Hmm. And my friend sort of nudged me and looked to the left. And I looked to the left and it was bloody Paul Weller, right? Mm. Sitting there just inches away from me. I was stood in the middle and he was sat right next to me, Paul Weller.
A bloodied Paul Weller?
It was a bloodied Paul Weller. And then he was absolutely fine. He wasn't bloodied. But he was about to get a form of bloody nose accidentally from me because basically what happened was I saw that it was Paul Weller. I was like, bloody hell, it's Paul Weller. And then, obviously, because, you know, you just carry on with your life. I carried on standing there. A couple of stops went by. And I'd sort of, my conscious brain had sort of got over the fact that Paul Weller was there, right? But unfortunately, my unconscious brain had very different ideas. And my unconscious brain decided to tell my mouth to start singing song.
No.
Going Underground.
No.
By the Jam.
No.
And honestly, I know. It was completely accidental. So what happened was...
You are the worst man who's ever lived.
So I was going underground. And then I suddenly remember, oh, no. Paul Weller's here. Stop. You can't sing Going Underground. Because so if people don't know this, Paul Weller was in a band called The Jam. They did a song called Going Underground.
Probably their most famous song.
The London Underground is sometimes referred to as the Underground.
And he will have heard that. People would have done that to him on the tube a million times.
Every single tube journey he's ever taken in his life since that song.
It felt like I was making fun of him or just being a div. So I'd go, stop it, Henry. Stop thinking about So stop singing, going underground in front next to Paul Weller. It feels like you're sort of bullying him or just being an idiot. So then I stopped. So I'd stop singing Paul Weller, going underground. But again, you know, life carries on. Two or three or four stops later now.
We both going to Heathrow. How far is this journey?
And again, my unconscious brain starts going, well, you know, it's bloody Paul Weller, isn't it? You know, what songs did he play?
He'll probably like this. No one's ever done this before. He'll probably think you're a really original character. Maybe he'll ask you to be friends.
No, but I don't think my unconscious brain had any agenda like that. I think my unconscious brain was just doing what it does, which is it makes connections. It goes, Paul Weller, the Jam. So we could think about Jam. We could think about blackcurrant jam. We could think about marmalade. Is that kind of jam? Yeah, that's okay. Think about that for a bit. So that's
Did you read out loud the giant jam sandwich as well?
and then your brain goes, well, he was in the Jam. And then it'll go, what songs did they do? Well, they did That's Entertainment. Yeah. We could hum that, but whatever.
Time Called Malice.
What else did they do? Did A Town Called Malice, decent song. They did Going Underground, ding, 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 ding. Then your unconscious goes, well, we're on the underground. That sort of, the synapses link or whatever. And again, I started singing it again, going underground. And then the friend with me started giving me eyes, like, stop singing Going Underground. Like, in his eye, he was sick, because like, it seems like you're really...
You're really trying to taunt him.
Really bullying Paul Weller. Really trying to taunt Paul Weller now.
And the people in the carriage, you know who they're going to side with. It's not going to be you.
It's always going to be Weller in that situation.
Did he didn't react in any way?
He didn't react in any way. I think he was like, here we go again.
This is the life I chose, rightly or wrongly.
Yeah. There's not, and probably, maybe it is, maybe it's all just punishment for the Style Council. maybe that's, it's a pill I have to swallow. Yeah, so that's... have you seen anyone famous on the tube?
Saw Michael Portillo, but I didn't sing at him.
Well, it's a political thing, isn't it? Which is you've got to sort of basically take the tube. If you're a politician,
yes,
you've got to be seen to travel with the people every so often.
You can cycle, if you wish.
You can cycle.
And I once saw Paddy Ashdown on a train.
But he was on top of the train, wasn't he? With a bazooka.
That's right.
And he was firing straight at you, wasn't he? That was quite a visceral... That was a visceral experience.
I've seen on the tube, I saw BBC political correspondent Nick Robinson looking very flustered and reading through lots of paper as if he was about to do an interview and hadn't quite done the prep and was doing it on the tube. Mm. I don't want to cast aspersions.
Can I say that's a level of fame which is to me, I think if I saw him on the tube, my body would have absolutely no reaction. There'd be no adrenaline, but nothing. It would just be like, you know, like getting into a perfectly tepid bath.
Yeah.
Your genitals drop into it and they're fine. Nothing's changed. Yeah. There's no threat. There's nothing exciting about this. There's no threat. There's nothing. It would just be, it's Nick Robinson. Yeah, fine.
Most people, of course, go into a bath toe first, but...
No.
Henry's not cut from the same cloth as the rest
Henry's,
of us.
Henry's feet and hands are connected to a drone, which then lowers him slowly.
Ben, I'm not ashamed to say it, hogtied.
Yeah. Hogtied to a drone.
I'm hogtied to a drone and...
Slowly lowered.
And regardless of the water temperature, you are going in.
I'm going in genitals first.
Uh-oh.
Lewd content warning. Lewd content. Content.
Hey, hey, hey. Because it's the same thing. It's, you rip the plaster off, you face your demons head on.
You scald your scrotum.
And if you scald it hard enough, it's the same reason that you put a sirloin steak straight into a hot, hot, hot pan. You seal the juices in. And that's how you keep it nice and moist inside. You seal that scrotum up with a hard, crunchy crust. Oh, God.
So you're saying that if you saw Nick Robinson... Mm. It would be like the experience of that. It would be like being hogtied to a drone and dropped into a bath.
And it being the right
being
temperature.
Exactly the right temperature. So in a way, relief would be the main feeling, I think.
A sense of relief, and I live to fight another
and
day.
And the sense of questioning, like, is this really necessary?
Is the whole thing worth it?
Yeah. But at the time, this was many years ago.
Was Nick Robinson, was he genuinely busy?
Yes, he was. He was,
or was he just appearing to be busy?
Oh, I don't know. Yes, he did.
Because Paddy Ashdown gave the appearance of being busy. Paddy Ashdown was also very good at carrying on working while everyone was staring at him. People quite openly stared at him.
Yeah.
And he was typing away. He was just sort of knocking out another book on the train to Crewkerne as the rest of us just looked on.
Yeah.
And did naff all with our time.
I once sat behind a quite prominent Plaid Cymru politician on the train to North Wales, and they sat down, they got their laptop out, they wrote the title of the thing they were going to write, which was like, I don't know, Reflections on Public Transport in Gwynedd or something, and then just fell asleep for 4 hours and then woke up wherever we were, closed the laptop, got off. And I thought, yeah.
Yeah, that's my approach to train work on the whole.
What was the thing you wrote at the top?
So, I can't remember, but it was some kind of, you know, fairly dry something about public transport, or, you know.
Ben, you could have filled it in.
Oh my God, I could have changed the trajectory of this country.
You could have filled it in, Ben. You could have had a major influence on the bus network in Gwynedd, on the Gwynedd tubes.
I tell you, one of the worst things that can happen on London's tube, especially to a Londoner, is if you run into, because it's such a close environment, if you run into someone you know on the tube, but sort of don't really want to talk to on the tube, yeah. You have to have this horrendously awkward conversation with everyone listening and everyone aware of what's going on. And I once had this experience. I was on the tube and I realised that right opposite me, literally opposite me, was someone I sort of knew but didn't want to talk to. And
did they want to talk to you?
Well, that was the thing.
They probably didn't want to talk to you either, Henry.
That was the thing. We had this weird game of eye chess where I just kept my eyes on my knees.
Yeah.
And I thought, I didn't have a prop. I didn't have a book. I didn't have the classics, which is you get that copy of the Metro. Obviously, that's why the Metro exists. You pull it up. Yeah, you use it as a face shield to not talk to people. But I didn't have anything like that. So I just tried to pull off this thing, which is maybe I can just sit opposite someone I know and not look at them. That can happen, right?
Well, not even acknowledge that they're there, ever. Did you do the little sort of nod or like a little...
Just at the last minute.
No. That's quite a clever one. Except I didn't know where he was getting off. I didn't know how long I could pull it off for. So I just had this thing, which is I'm just going to not look at his face. But it was such a dangerous game because if my eyes accidentally glanced at his face, we'd have to talk. So I just sort of pretended I'm just not looking. I'm just a guy who's going to happen to not look at your face.
I imagine he found this whole thing quite chilling.
I think he did. But also it did occur to me as well that I did realise after a certain amount of stops that he was doing exactly the same thing to me. And we were both playing this kind of unusual British sort of like game of, I know that you don't want to talk to me. You know that I don't want to talk to you, but we're not going to let each other know that we both know that each other doesn't want to talk to the other
because
one.
Because Scarborough's in the past and we don't want to talk about it anymore. Bye, Andrew.
But all I did was I just to make sure the point got home. I did rip his trousers off as I got off at Paddington. I did rip his trousers off.
You do that anyway when you get off the tube. I've seen you
exactly. Yeah.
There should be a word, shouldn't there, that you can just invoke and just say it, and that means like,
let's not do this.
Like, yeah. If it feels like there needs to be the same word for like if you're getting your hair cut and you don't really want to talk to the hairdresser. Instead, because you can never say
word of sorts.
You can't say, do you mind if we don't chat? I just want to have some quiet time. That's weird. But if there was just a thing you could just say it, one word, and they know what it means, and you just...
Fanjambo.
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 Fanjambo. I invoke Fanjambo.
Exactly.
Often, sometimes with that, I might not be in the mood, but often it's more likely than I'll feel like I'm not going to give you what you want here. I'm not up to this. You might be very good at this, but you're going to... You're just going to be flailing against a sort of wet rag here. Nothing's... You're not going to be getting the good stuff out of me. You're better off not wasting your time, not trying to get any life out of me. Just listen to the music in the background.
Fanjambo.
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 Fanjambo. I'd like, I can have a Fanjambo appointment, please.
Yes.
With Carl at 10:45. Great. I'd happily pay a Fanjambo premium.
I would like to go to a Fanjambo wedding.
Oh, wow.
So do you think could Fanjambo be a service that you pay for that we could monetize?
So
if someone
comes around your house and doesn't speak to you.
So if you subscribe to Fanjambo, it gets you, it's the opposite of a phone network or a phone, which we happily pay for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
which is to communicate with people, but a network, which means you don't have to communicate with people. So if you subscribe to Fanjambo with our opening package, $7.99 a month, you don't have to talk to anyone you knew from school, for example.
But it's a nice idea. How does this package
I know
confer any value to the
we've got the elevator pitch.
Yeah,
and he's nailed it,
Ben. This is the kind of negativity that really, because who gives a shit? The main thing is the idea is good. It's like with Coca-Cola, a black drink, fizzy drink in a red can. That's the idea. Brilliant. They work out how to make it later on. It's a red can. That's the main thing. Red can, fizzy drink, black drink, red can. Christmassy. Who cares what's in it? Do you know what I mean? We'll work that out later. It's the concept, the key idea.
But I think in your business model, you're going to have to start basically hiring like squads of goons to go around stopping people from invoking Fanjambo without paying.
Yes.
So essentially it becomes like a sort of protection racket where...
Yeah, yeah, great.
If someone says Fanjambo within earshot of one of your goons...
And subscribers, yeah. You're going to have to... Investigators finding people from their past just to inform them, just so you know, should you come across Henry back on a tube or in any other situation, he has declared Fanjambo. So please, no conversational gambits.
Oh, that's quite a moment, isn't it? When, you know, there's a knock on the door... And your mother opens it, and a man says, "I'm afraid your son has invoked Fanjambo. He never wants to speak to you again.
He does want to see you.
Fanjambo!
He'll see you at Christmas.
He Fanjamboed his own mother.
He's happy to sit next to you on the sofa and watch the Queen's speech.
But in silence, please.
Well, in companionable silence, please.
He has Fanjamboed, yeah.
Fanjambo car. You could buy Fanjambo cars.
Well, there could be Fanjambo carriages on the train.
Yes. Well, no, but the other thing is, the most high-tech version, I think, is a Fanjambo face helmet, where essentially you're wearing a helmet which looks exactly like your face, over your face, over your head.
Right. Very good. Yes.
And it basically, the ear holes, using in-out sphincter technology, your ear holes only open up to allow in noise or words, language, from people that you have not Fanjambo.
Which would be processed on an app of some sort.
Which you process on app. So basically, if someone that you Fanjamboed comes up to you on the tube, your eye holes won't let in the visual waves.
Yeah.
And your ear holes won't let in the sound. So they just won't be there for you.
So you're spared the awkwardness.
You're completely spared the awkwardness. It's deep. This is the luxury deluxe platinum Fanjambo packages.
Oh, that's $29.99.
That's $29.99 a month. They are Fanjamboed at source, these people. So you don't even have to.
And they're electrocuted by the helmet?
They are electrocuted. They are incinerated, powdered, and they're put into a little capsule the size of a Tic Tac, which you can either swallow or send to their relatives. So you got options. But also, what would be really nice is you see someone on the tube. Yeah, let's say it's a guy. You did a summer job with this guy in a gift shop in Islington. Let's say
okay.
And you both look at each other, and then you both, what would happen is, I'm guessing, some sort of, would it come out of your mouth, a tube with the F, the...
The Fanjambo insignia.
The Fanjambo insignia. You'd both...
That's probably the simplest way to do it.
What, the internal tube method?
Because you go to say... Oh, hi, Ian. God, that job was annoying, wasn't it? Do you remember our boss? All this absolute Fanjambo, classic Fanjamboable stuff. Yeah. In fact, we could use that in the ad, couldn't we?
Oh, yeah.
And me and Mike could do voiceovers and even face unders for the roles. We could play them.
Yeah.
You're about to speak, but instead, the internal tube comes...
Hang on, why have you two been casting the advert? There was no mention of me being in the advert. You said that as if, oh, yeah, me and Mike could be in it.
Look,
one of us has got to play someone called Ian in this, okay? Or we just don't think you're ready to play. We don't think you're quite ready to stretch to that, Ben.
Mike, can you tell Henry that I'm Fanjamboing him for the rest of the episode?
Stop it already.
Look, we both know, Ben. Look, we all know. We don't have to be
He's giving
about
you
it,
the insignia.
You can only do voiceover, Ben. You've got one thing on your voiceover CV, which is you can play anthropomorphized ferret.
And who doesn't want to talk to an anthropomorphized ferret?
Yeah, good point. Good point.
No one would Fanjambo that.
I was trying to get into the compare the meerkat thing, but
And there's also, there's some footnotes with that, which is not, you can't play a hero ferret.
Right.
Or a leading ferret.
You're very much a character ferret.
But ideally background ferret or silent ferret.
Also, Henry, as we established...
Ferret in, with hat.
As we established in a previous episode, when you said there's only one thing on your voiceover CV, that overestimates it by one.
Well, you wish it was one, because then you wouldn't be paying infinite VAT. You just need that one gig to get your VAT manageable.
Oh, just that one. And it's not the Fanjambo ad, apparently.
It's not going to be that. You're not getting that gig, sorry.
But no, lovely moment when you spot someone, you go to speak to them, but then the tube comes out of your gullet, comes out of your mouth with the Fanjambo logo on the end, which his tube comes out of his mouth or her mouth. The Fanjambo, the two logos, they're intelligent logos, they recognise each other, they both glow.
Right.
And then it's just a toss of the dice, which one of you gets dissolved and turned into that little thing in the capsule. But that's a...
And there'd be probably geolocation on it, so you wouldn't even need to actively slip it out. It's just going to loll out as soon as that person approaches.
Mm. Exactly. As you say, Ben, Fanjambo weddings, the entire wedding done by Fanjambo.
Brilliant. Because actually, I think once Fanjambo is happening, it's quite nice actually to see that person. It may not be unpleasant to see that person and sort of nod, maybe, say, you know, sort of physical, oh, hi.
Well,
but that's as far as it needs to go.
But then you know what might happen, Ben, actually, is you'll think, you know what? I've spent $29.99 a month to not have to speak to this guy. And that's fine. That's good. I made that decision. I'm happy with it. It's a great package. Yeah. But
and the customer service, when it started malfunctioning, they were very quick to because the number of people who were getting turned into pellets who weren't on my Fanjambo list was was absolutely horrifying.
I pelleted pretty much everyone. Well, certainly all my close family got pelleted.
Everyone within a 4 mile radius.
Everyone within a 4 mile radius got pelleted.
It's a series of pellets.
I mean, even which included the Fanjambo, my local Fanjambo store, they all got it. It's like, I couldn't talk to them. That was a fool's errand. But they were quick on it, weren't they? They were quick to say, we will look into the pelleting issue that we've heard may be happening in your area.
They were much quicker to respond once all their staff had been pelleted. Anyway, sorry, I cut you off there, Henry.
No, but yeah, sometimes you might look at that person and actually go, you know what? We've not chatted since we had that job, summer job, years ago in that shop in Islington. I mean, and we've almost certainly got nothing in common. So but you know, we have both signed up to Fanjambo. I mean, you know, see, maybe nice actually to have a chat with him about the whole Fanjambo experience. How is it working for him? Did he have anyone he knew?
And then you're pelleted? A pellet. Bam.
And then you're bang, bam. You're pelleted. Bam. Because and you signed up for
breach of contract pellet.
End of contract breach. any contract breach will be punished with instant pelleting, because you have to sign up for the whole concert.
Pellet first, questions later.
And it will be a relatively deluxe pellet, because if you sign up for $29.99 a month,
yeah,
you'll get it won't just be a hollowed out tic tac, like that's what they use on the cheaper pellet. It'll be a bespoke molded plastic pellet.
Not dissimilar to the inside of a Kinder egg.
This time the surprise is you. $29.99 a month.
And that will happen if it's just like a billing problem with their system, which means your direct debit
has going to be glitches. There's going to be teething troubles.
Yep.
So it's quite a high wire thing, really.
That's the price you pay for progress.
Yeah. Isn't it? Yeah. And obviously you can, the very open is, you can call them up if, for example, you've been stuck on your old
Fandango. It's not Fandango.
Fandango. Fandambo.
Fanjambo.
Pelleted. You've got the name wrong. Oh, no. You're pelleted now.
That's so easy.
It's an absolute tightrope walk.
Decimate the population. Within minutes of being activated.
Fantambo.
Fantambo.
They're very open about pelleted.
I can't believe you think you're the one to be in the advert where you can't even get the name right.
They're very open, Fandambo. You will have, I think the policy should be, you can call up if, for example, you're accidentally stuck on an old tariff, and they could lower it, because that will happen is after the first year.
Oh, you've pelleted so many people.
You've pelleted so many people that actually your premium has gone down, but actually your tariff stays high. You can call up. You go straight through to someone.
Well, that's how they get you, isn't it?
And they'll exactly. But they'll lower your rate immediately and pellet you. Same call.
So for a moment, you think you've got yourself a really good deal. Then you realise...
Well, you have. No, you have, but you've been pelleted, Ben. It's part of the... You've signed up for it. It's part of it. Because in the same way that you want a Fandango...
It's not a Fandango.
People, you also want... Oh, God. One strike and you're pelleted.
Two strikes, even smaller pellet. We're getting denser. Are you listening to this podcast intentionally and not just because a loved one has put it on in the car and what's wrong with just sitting in companionable silence for once? Then you, in the first category, might be interested to know that Three Bean Salad are doing a live show on Saturday, the 17th of September, 2022. 4:30 p.m. at the London Podcast Festival, King's Place, London, obviously. Not Exeter or Cardiff, where Mike and Ben live, but London, where Henry lives and where we did it last year, which is fine. Tickets to be in the room on the day or to stream the show for up to 7 days after the event are available from Thursday, the 30th of June. Patreon members get access to a pre-sale from the 28th of June. Expect magic. Expect dance. Expect razzmatazz. Expect Jesse Plemons on decks and Russell Crowe telling all about the secrets of ostrich farming. Expect that, but don't get it. Get three men sitting in chairs doing lukewarm banter. Live.
Okay, time to read your emails. We need an emails jingle, I think.
Oh, yeah.
How have we not done that? It happens every week.
That's extraordinary, isn't it?
Oh, if only there was someone whose job it was to... actually take responsibility for coming up with ideas for jingles and doing the jingles and stuff. Who should have done that? Oh.
Someone's getting a bit crotchety before lunch, aren't they?
Oh. I've literally not eaten a banana today, so... If you can imagine that, that's where I'm coming from right now.
I do think I can imagine that.
Well, we'll have a think about the... I think we will make some kind of email jingle.
Mm. I think we should email jingle which sums up, Ben... The technological wonder of just communication in the email age, while at the same time doffing its cap and giving a sly nod and a wink to the old postmasters. Well, I think there should be the sound of a horse being shod.
But by a machine.
I thought you were going to say a horse being shot.
Well, but, yeah, do what you want with it creatively, but...
But by a machine.
That feels dark.
Of some sort.
But, yeah, but a horse being shod by a robot, I suppose.
Being shot by a Terminator.
a musical Terminator.
Yeah, something like that.
Anyway, that's for the future. Here's an email. This is an email where the subject alone got me excited. So this is from Ando, and the subject is A Submariner's Perspective.
Give me an armchair and 4 hours with this person and I will show them a good time. I'll have a good time.
So they write, Ando Ruyuhama here. This is not my real name, so excuse the nom de plume, but I fear spurbs.
Fair enough. Yep.
He can reach you anywhere, even at the depths.
Yeah.
He starts at the depths. You know what I mean? That's where he comes up from. That's who he bubbles up from.
Yeah. So Ando writes, up until August of last year, I was a submariner serving in the Royal Navy. And I now work as an engineer building guided missile systems for a subsidiary of BAE Systems.
Okay.
Imagine my surprise when I discovered your podcast and heard the amount of airtime you devote to both submarines and BAE. We have mentioned both those things in the past. I do, however, have one thing to say, having listened to your exercise episode. Now, this is a while ago. During the episode, one of us made a reference to a 75 horsepower wind.
Right.
He writes, a 75 horsepower wind would be incredible, literally incredible and terrifying. Allow Our Lady Mathematics to paint a picture worthy of Henry, semi-decent cartoonist Packer.
I mean, yeah.
That's not gone down well, I'll tell you that, from the look of his face on Zoom.
Yeah, well.
He can handle lukewarm banter and being used as a sleep aid, but do not come for his cartooning.
Unless you've got a guided missile system.
Yes, in which case it's absolutely open season.
Because, in which case, fill your boots. Because the pen might be mightier than the sword, which it isn't.
But it's not mightier than an Exocet missile.
It's not. It's just not. It's just not. And they're both the same shape. Which is a tube. They're both tube-shaped, aren't they?
Tubes. He writes, 1 horsepower is the amount of work required to move 550 pounds 1 foot in 1 second.
Why would you want to do that? I mean, why are we basing our measurements around such a bizarre tall story? Well, how on earth are we in that situation?
Well, I assume that's how much weight a horse can move 1 foot in 1 second.
So 1 second, the weight of the horse, isn't it? How it can move itself.
Oh, I see.
Oh,
he's not dragging a missile.
So.
So do horses move at 1 second per foot? Do they?
That's right. At all times and at no other speeds.
So 1 foot, or 1 foot per second.
And if they're still, they're actually doing that just forwards and backwards, but just such a fast rate that it looks like they're standing still.
It's 1 foot per second. It's hard to work out if that's fast or not. Is that fast? Sort of sounds fast because it's just per second, but it's only a foot. Tricky.
They could traverse your body in 6 seconds.
It would take them 6 seconds to trample me from the feet to the scalp.
Yeah, I think that's quite slow moving, yeah. I think that's being sort of rolling pinned, essentially.
I think if you were to ask me while that was happening, Henry, do you feel this stamping is going quickly or not? I think I'd be I'd be saying, oh, no, it's actually really dragging on, if anything. So, yeah, maybe that's how they measured it.
So he writes, therefore, a 75-horsepower wind gusting for even a single second would be enough to move 18 tonnes a single foot.
Handy.
Or the average Hyundai i10, approximately 20 feet. This is from a single 1 second gust. From a nautical perspective, a 75 horsepower persistent wind would propel the average 17th century ship of the line at 1,000 tons to the speed of sound in 33 seconds. Batten down the hatches might not quite cover it. I put it to you that horsepower is not a great wind unit.
Well, it depends which end of the horse you're standing, doesn't it? Right, let's move on. Let's move on.
He continues, however, I can speak from experience when I say that a 75-horsepower wind would not do as much damage as the wind produced on a Thursday morning on board a Vanguard-class submarine because Wednesday night was curry night.
Hey, there we go. Beautifully done, Ando.
And 160 hairy-assed submariners really can do some damage.
Lovely. And very much thinking in tune with our own Henry Packer there. Lovely.
Great stuff. We're on the same page. I saw an ad for BAE Systems on the tube the other day.
Mm-hmm. That's weird.
Yeah, that is weird. It's like how
2-for-1 landmines or something.
It had a picture of a plane, a military plane, and it was just a general... It was like one of those ones for Nike where it's just a someone running or whatever. It was just saying we're generally good. It wasn't selling a specific product, but it's sort of a bit odd. I didn't know who what I was supposed to buy off the back of it. But anyway.
Maybe you're supposed to get an apprenticeship, do some designs. You must have, as a kid, drawn some sort of battle scenes and some weapons and stuff.
Well, I wish I had gone that way, mate, but unfortunately I've just saddled myself with with monthly payments for a tornado. Which
nightmare to park in your part of London.
Nightmare to park, and even spread over 5 years, it's over £75,000 a month. So even broken down like that, it's still galling. And then tornado insurance on top of that.
Yeah,
well, it's a two seater though, isn't it? At least
it is a two seater,
so it's all right for those, you know, those all the city break weekends.
But adapting it for Bluebell is going to cost a fortune.
Well, the first time we took her on there, she did a look that unmistakably said, where's the rear guns? Where's my rear gunner compartment?
Yeah.
You've bought the wrong kind of plane.
Where am I going to stick a postcard of a Virilin? Where am I going to stick that, Henry? It was all implied in the look.
Andy writes, PS, attached is a photo of me on board the boat to prove it. Please don't share this, as technically it was never supposed to have been taken.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
He could be had up for espionage, could he?
And there he is on his submarine. And the submariners, all of them, look very, very hench. I'll just send you the image.
They will be beefy.
Good grief. That's some powerful-looking submariners.
Pretty beefy guys, right?
Because
You don't need to be that strong when you're in a submarine, because the battle stuff is taken care of with the torpedoes, right?
Well, you think it rows itself, do you? Unbelievable, you guys. You landlubbers.
I just think given the limited space in what is essentially just a fairly small tube, you want small weedy people like me.
You want little elfin people.
Yeah.
You are, you too. You, that's a good point, actually. But that is a problem in society, I'd say, at the moment, is unnecessary henchness. is beefing up, filling up our streets with beefy. Like you open your front door and you've got a big beefy shoulder in your face. You can barely
move.
The
look is important, guys, because those guys, they're not just submariners. They are ambassadors of Her Majesty's Navy.
To the deep.
To the giant squid.
To the squids. And the various threats that they keep in check. Because
exactly.
If it wasn't for submariners, we'd be overrun by giant squids, wouldn't we? And the fact that we can eat calamares on a beach holiday.
Yeah. The fact that we've got stingrays in aquariums and not in our own homes.
Yeah.
Is down to those guys.
Well, because stingrays are actually birds, aren't they? It's the submariners that keep them underwater. You can see from what they're clearly flying. You can see what they're doing. So imagine them above ground.
Nightmare.
Above water.
Well, thanks, Ando.
Yes, thank you, Ando.
Thanks, Ando.
And that might be it, because I've got to go.
It's time to pay the ferryman. Patreon.com/3beansalad.
Thank you to everyone who signed up on the Patreon.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed.
There are various tiers, there are various things you can access, bonus episodes, etc. If you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get access to the Sean Bean Lounge, where Michael was last night.
Sure was.
And I believe it was the Monster Truck Derby.
It certainly was.
The annual Sean Bean Monster Truck Derby.
As it turns out, and here's my report.
The gloves were off last night at the Sean Bean Lounge, unless they were driving gloves, in which case they stayed on for the Sean Bean Lounge Monster Truck Derby. In the Dirt Bastard Slalom, Ellie's Jurassic Rod Fossil smashed Beth Jackson's Ozone Devastator to smithereens and ran Helen Latham's Warrior Priestess with Cumbersome Sword off the track into Will Cockrum's unattended Arse Thunder Crush Station, all while he was trying to put a banana in the exhaust of Kieran Hayward's workable hangover. The freestyle speed-off saw James Nicholas's guilt-wrecked Widowmaker take a pummeling from Iona Yagamuchi's In for an Inferno, In for a Pounding, just as Matt's Gas Orangutan leapfrogged Marcus Gray's Tornado Voyeur, landing right on top of Kevin Marshall's Colonel Crunch and bouncing into the recently repaired wing mirror of Alex's Bigfoot Toaster. Jessica Gunn's revenge of the least favourite sibling beasted Mark Constable's Imagine a Pig with a Rifle in the Ditch and Pitch, and the evening drew to a dramatic close as Lackey Quirk was braced for the double flip death ramp challenge when who should flatten his Maxi Muddy Puddle Splasher but Sean Bean himself on El Bino Loco. Keep it monster.
Okay, so, well, this is the end of the show. Thank you very much for listening. The last thing we need to do is decide which version of our theme tune, provided by you, the listeners, to play us out with. And I've decided to go with Kathy Rivett, and more specifically, Kathy Rivett's dog, Barney, who has provided this week's theme tune. Well, Kathy writes, "Hello, Beans. Here is my dog's version of the theme song. I've been playing violin since before getting a dog. When we got the dog, he made practicing violin very difficult. He sings along. Before you get a bollocking on my behalf on how I shouldn't play violin around him, please note I always open the door so he can go outside and leave, but he generally comes closer like he wants to join in. So I've attached the audio of Barney, the spaniel, singing with violin accompaniment from me. Also attached a picture of Barney looking majestic." And I'm looking at the picture now. I can confirm he does look pretty majestic, Barney. He's lying down, front legs stretched out in front of him, lying on a pebble beach. Nice big grey pebbles that look like the ones that you might get a painting of in the reception area of a spa. He's got a big pink tongue. He looks like he's got long black sort of shiny hair. He looks to me like he's a lab, or possibly a black golden retriever. So maybe we might put this picture up on social media. It should be good. Anyway, here's Barney to sing us out, accompanied by Kathy Rivett. Goodbye. He's a spaniel. She said it in the email. Barney's a spaniel.